When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Blackwood Distilling was created in 2020 after co-founder Guinness McFadden won the 2019 Kentucky Derby with Country House at 65-1 odds. McFadden then doubled down, turning Blackwood Farms into Blackwood Distilling with the help of the Justins of Justin's House of Bourbon in Lexington and Louisville.
Together, they created a luxury bourbon and rye with a toasted barrel finish. Using 7 to 9 year old Kentucky bourbon finished in medium toasted Kelvin Cooperage barrels, they bottled a barrel-strength Kentucky bourbon that harkened back to the heyday of Kentucky's spirit in the 50s and 60s. With a deep creamy body, soft barrel spices, and balance with that iconic hint of vanilla lurking underneath it all.
Oh man, harkening is definitely one of my favorite things to do.
I love a harkener.
Mm-hmm. Alongside the bourbon, they also created America's first triple barrel finished toasted rye whiskey at barrel strength. By using toasted barrels from Kelvin Cooperage, Blackwood created an Indiana rye whiskey blended from 5 to 7 year old barrels like no other, with a deep sense of barrel spice, stewed dark fruits, holiday cakes, and soft mint with a hint of white pepper warmth.
Mm-hmm. You know what hearing about a holiday cake in Indiana reminds me of?
Mm.
Did you know when Larry Bird was injured, he would always order a wedding cake from the local bakery and eat the whole thing. And his reasoning was, no one's going to screw up a wedding cake.
Sure. Yeah.
Batch 4 of the bourbon and batch 3 of the rye, along with single barrels of each, are hitting shelves in Kentucky and Florida now, and Texas in August, with more states coming soon. Please visit blackwooddistillingco.com to see where you can find and buy them right now. Just hit that shop button or call your local bakery and ask for a wedding cake.
See, that's winner's mindset. That's why he was a champion.
Yeah.
You want to start this show?
I do want to start this show. I always want to start the show.
What's going on? You're listening to the Top Chef Frotcast Post Show. We are talking about episode 3, season 1 of Top Chef. I'm Vince Mancini. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Joey Devine.
That's me.
That's you.
I wasn't on last week's episode because I was replaced by Rossica.
I mean, I don't know if we're calling it last week's episode. Well, it's bonus content.
I was in Las Vegas for basketball reasons. That's why I wasn't around last week.
Mm, that's okay. What were you doing? What basketball reasons? What were you doing?
It's a summer league in Las Vegas. I ate at Momofuku in Las Vegas. I ate the $19 prime rib at the El Cortez.
Which one was better?
I mean, Momofuku is really good, but yeah, you can't beat a $19 prime rib.
I haven't had Momofuku. What did you get? What do they have?
Well, it was really interesting. I wanted to order the Bo Sam because that's like the famous David Chang thing, right? Well, the like slow roasted pork shoulder with like curry and banchan that you put in little lettuce wraps. But the waiter was like, "Don't! It's too much food for the size of your table. How about we do it omokaze style, where you guys tell me your budget per person, and I will just order everything for you," which is what we did.
Wow,
and it was awesome. That waiter ruled, but I also cannot tell you what I ate. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. It was just like
a parade of meats and food.
Yeah. I also ate at the James Beard Award winning Lotus of Siam, the Thai restaurant in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Good.
Yeah.
Get her.
Wow.
What
did they win?
Chef.
What did they win a James Beard Award for?
Thai food. being Thai food in Las Vegas. I don't know.
You know, man. I also ate in Las Vegas last week. It was.
Did you?
Yeah. We stopped at a Mexican restaurant on the way from Fresno to Southern Utah. We drove all the way from Fresno up to Montana and stopped at a few. National parks. Our first stop was in the Tehachapi McDonald's, and it was like every experience from the desert out there that I expected. It was just like a bunch of very weird looking locals that like seemed methy and leering and creepy. But then yeah, we stopped in Vegas on the way. That was our first meal stop. And we had Mexican food, and that was about it.
Mexican food is always good.
It was good Mexican food.
Even
I don't remember
Mexican
the name
food.
Of the place.
Well, but... okay, Mexican food is always good unless you are in the city of New York.
It is really like baffling how bad Mexican food is in New York. I mean, I don't know if it's changed. I haven't lived there since 2010, but yeah, I did not find any good Mexican food when I lived there. And I was looking.
Yeah.
You know what? What are we doing today?
We're talking Top Chef, Season 1, Episode 3. But we did go to a food event a few weeks ago that we should probably talk about.
That's right. We sure did. I don't even remember what they were calling it. It was like the Bear X Stella Artois.
Uh-huh. X Chaos Menu.
It's,
right?
It's
wasn't the idea was Chaos Menu?
I like when they call things like an activation event because you're like, I don't know what that means, but this is like PR speak for like a party that we throw. Mm-hmm. But you got a budget, and I like to eat free stuff, so
yeah,
you know, let's make the magic happen.
I will say, at our food event, we didn't eat enough.
No, we definitely didn't. We didn't go out for food afterward. It wasn't that bad.
I kind of wanted to, though.
Yeah, I kind of did, too. So, like, the pitch was that Chris Bianco, famous pizza maker, I actually interviewed him a few years ago, but the audio was so bad that I couldn't use any of it.
He also insisted on shaking our hands at the end of the night, and he had the softest hands I've ever felt in my entire life.
He did have the hands of a pizzaiola.
Yeah.
What was the Thai guy's name that I'm forgetting?
Justin Peake. Trungzi. I don't know how to say his last name, but he was a judge on the final episode of the newest episode of Top Chef.
That's
the new
season. Yeah, some of the
from Anna Jack Thai.
What is it?
He's from Anna Jack Thai.
Anna Jack Thai. He was very cool. I really liked him.
Me too.
Was spilling the dirt on Emerald, drinking just like glass after glass of Chardonnay at the Top Chef finale, which. Yeah. You know, I would do if I was Emerald, too.
Emerald should never be sober. He's from New Orleans. It's in his blood.
I think he's from, like, Boston or something
that. Well, but he's, you know, he is New Orleans.
He's an adopted son. Yeah. He is, like, the most Cajun dude from Brockton, Mass. Or wherever he's from.
He's, like, he's Treme. a man from the East Coast. Telling us how much he loves New Orleans.
Yeah. So we were there, and it was, we were expecting like a sit down sort of,
I
don't drive.
They were like fine dining chaos menu.
Yeah.
It was not a sit down.
No. I mean, I don't drive to LA like every week. So like when I do, like I did because, you know, I was promised Chris Bianco and Justin, last name I can't pronounce, food, and I was into that. Like, that's a good enough reason for me to make a 3.5 hour drive. So we get there, and first of all, they didn't tell the door person that that
I almost didn't get in, folks.
Yeah, you almost didn't get in. I had a plus one, which I cleared with the person the publicist who invited me ahead of time. She even sent me like two tickets with like. Actual
And when you showed scannable the person things at the on door them? Tickets, they were like, "There's tickets to this thing?"
Yeah, they did not.
They'd never seen tickets in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about if you've never been to a brand publicist event in LA, like one of the key features of it is that there's like 30 people working this event that have never worked this kind of event before.
Yes. I mean, to give them credit as a person who's worked these sort of events.
Not because they're like inept, but because like this event has never existed before.
They literally signed up for this job today and just showed up and no one told them what to do.
It's not their fault at all, but like no one tells them what to do. There's probably like five different publicists like with five different invite lists and like they're all on a different page. Anyway, it was very
He did eventually get in,
but it was very
good because we needed two people to be able to spot where the food was coming out of to go run and get it before all the other LA monsters ran to get it. It was past hors d'oeuvres. These were past hors d'oeuvres. They were a little bigger than hors d'oeuvres, but still.
It was finger food, basically.
Yeah.
Food would come out. They would, Chris Bianco and Justin would talk about
the
dish.
The nervous man from the bear, because it was Bear event. Sweeps from the bear was very nervous. He was really worried. It was really cute, actually, how nervous he was to make sure he was explaining the food correctly.
They forced like a tertiary actor from the show to be like the face of this event, which feels like asking a lot. I wouldn't have wanted to do that at all.
But and you'd see him in between like reading his little card like, okay, it has it's a Thai spiced lamb with on pizza dough with it's like a Chicago hot dog. Okay. You'd like see him talking to himself in like a little corner making sure he got it all right before the food came out.
Yeah, and so if you've never been to like a movie premiere or other like obnoxious LA bullshit event, like the most salient feature of one of them is just sort of looking around and wondering who the fuck everybody is, because there's always like 40% of the crowd that are not famous, but they have like styled themselves like famous people and
their
carry themselves like famous people.
I actually felt like at this particular event, they were taking a lot of Stella Artois photos for social or whatever.
I mean, that's what the entire event exists for, presumably.
But I felt like at least 80% of the people there were actually like hip-looking LA people that Stella Artois had hired to make the party look fun. Like model types, you know?
Yes. Well, I mean, that's like the old booth babe stereotype from any sort of event or like a Comic-Con. But then there was also, I mean, the first people that Joey and I spotted, I mean, and this was this was sort of a mix of obnoxious people and then people just like filming constantly with like a lot of overlap between the two. And like people with very obvious like branding devices that they were wearing.
Yeah.
And like the most obvious of this group was like these two guys wearing like trucker hats that just say like "Yes, Chef."
And like big bold letters.
Big bold letters. I've always said that like if you see someone wearing like a black shirt with some sort of slogan on it and like big white letters, that's like the human version of an Amazonian tree frog with like bright colors. It's like you don't want to get
don't go near that.
That's a sign warning you to stay away. It's like a bumper sticker for
your body.
Anyway,
the Yes Chef guys are TikTok foodies with a million followers.
Yeah, like I mean, when we saw them, it was just like, okay, there's these two like sort of fratty looking zoomers, one of whom is very difficult on the eyes. I mean, I'm sorry, like I'm not pretending I'm the most handsome person on earth, but he's just off-putting looking, and he's the face guy, we found out, and the handsome guy was actually the cameraman. But yeah, they are like full-time food influencers.
They're guys who go, this is the best hot dog in New York City.
Yeah.
Let's give it a try.
Yeah. Like, we watched it, and it could not be, like, we've ripped on Danny from Top Chef season 21 mm-hmm. for just, like, saying, like, super boring, like, Zoomer stuff. Like, let's go. That's fire. Oh,
yeah, that's fire.
But if you watch these guys' videos, it is that. Just, like, yeah. The dullest.
It's like if a robot was a food a food guy. They'd be like, yeah. This guy wakes up at 5 a.m. every morning to make his cronuts. Yeah. Let's give it a shot. Oh my God.
Oh my God, you guys.
That's gotta be the best cronut I've ever
eaten. This is so fire. Like,
it's a fire ass cronut. I will be coming back. Let's go.
Yeah. So anyway, there was a piece in this all came up. There's a piece in Grubhub or Grub Street about how restaurants are like courting influencers because
say at this food event we watched this happen because it was impossible to get the food. We would have to fight the rabid dogs to grab two tacos, and then you'd watch the famous chef walk an individual plate out to the man wearing the Fortnite streamer who pivoted to food.
They were getting just their ass kissed up and down this event. Yeah. And we were like, who the fuck are these guys? Not that I was like, I mean, I was jealous, let's be honest.
Yeah, but I wanted to eat some food. There were still some items I did not try.
Yeah, not so much of the ass kissing, but just like, you know, the ability to get food.
The ability to get food at the food event. Yeah, yeah. That was what I was jealous of.
Yeah. So there's this article on these TikTok influencers. Of course, they show up in there. I'm trying to find like a good. it's a great hate read. But the part where these guys show up is this paragraph. Joe Isidori is the chef and owner of Arthur and Sons, a meatballs and macaroni Italian spot that opened in the West Village last year. He is also an engagement guru, having previously invented the candy-loaded milkshakes at Black Tap Burgers that became a defining beverage of the 2010s Instagram
He's
era.
He's like the Shingy of food. Remember Shingy from AOL?
Yes. quote, I kind of cracked the code 9 years ago, he says. He's since left Black Tap and traded burgers for burrata, but he hasn't lost his deft digital touch. Developing an informal partnership, he calls it a bromance and no money is exchanged. Mm-hmm. With Jack Goldberg, the 24-year-old star of Jack's Dining Room, 261,000 followers, who launched his account last year, partly in an effort to procure free meals. These are the Yes Chef guys, by the way. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Together, Isidori and Goldberg take a shameless, boisterous approach to chasing views. Quote, I've heard all the hype that Arthur and Sons is better than Carbone, so I had to see for myself. But no one told me the owner, Joe, is the fucking man, Goldberg effuses in one video, as Isadora feeds him a heaping forkful of cheese.
Yeah, he always says fucking like that. He's like, it's like, oh, this lobster beignet is the fucking best beignet I've ever had.
Yeah. The camera zooms in on Goldberg's bug-eyed, orgasmic expression as a strand of cheese stretches from a mozzarella stick to his mouth. He always is dripping something in his mouth. It's very disgusting. Let me just say this. The spicy rigatoni blew Carbone out of the stratosphere. The cheesy mozz bites were ridiculous. These homemade balls had me dancing, and the truffle cream pasta was the knockout punch.
I will give the Yes Chef man, Mr. Jack's Dining Room, some credit, because you know what he's not doing? In his car, the lowest form of food.
No, reviewing. There's production values.
Why are they in their car? Why are we?
I get that. I get that
car?
Because, like, as a Gen Y person, it like embarrasses me greatly to do a front facing video like in front of people out in the world. So, like, if I'm in my car and I don't do this, but I can see the logic behind it. If you're in your car, you have your like fortress of solitude in there where you don't have to be seen by random yokels while you try to do fucking obnoxious
but
Instagram
videos. But it's the saddest way to eat something is in your car.
That's true. Yes, that is very true. Yeah, you're not really getting like a dining experience, and especially not like the communal one that restaurants want you to have with you know, their food. By the way, I'm so glad that the communal table has like gone out of fashion.
That's the Italian part of you. The Irish part of me is like, bring back the communal table. I've got to tell lies and sing songs.
I mean, if people were cooler, like I feel like in Australia, I would enjoy a communal table because like the baseline conversation ability of people is much higher than here. But like most of the time, I don't want to talk to other people most of the time. They're lame.
That's why you eat all your meals in your car. Like
that's right.
Eats.
Yeah. In my little Fiat. No. Yeah. Anyway, that was our food event. I just
the food was good, even though it was sparse.
Another thing that is interesting, I watched a couple of that guy's videos, and there's one where he like pronounces Wagyu, and yeah, I'm convinced he's doing that as an engagement strategy because like. Zoomers, like they know TikTok and the Instagram Reels algorithm well enough that they understand that like a misplaced mispronunciation here and there will cause people to like send it an outrage share, an outrage comment, which will like increase their algorithmic visibility. And I'm quite positive that he's doing that on purpose.
Yeah, they didn't fall out of a coconut tree or whatever we're talking about these days.
No, they exist in the context of all that came before them. But you know what? We're not here to talk about Jack's dining room, even though we already did.
We're here to talk about the year 2006.
No, we're talking episode 3, season 1 of Top Chef, premiering March 22nd, 2006. You know, I felt you needed like some context about what was going on that day. Some of the other shows that it was premiering against. What's that?
The Iraq War.
The Iraq War. There was Law and Order, Criminal Minds. We got Lost. We got America's Next Top Model. Remember that show? Veronica Mars. American Idol. Bones.
I was talking yesterday about Veronica Mars. How like. Ivy and I are looking for another show to like watch together. And I was like, I wish I hadn't seen Veronica Mars because that's the kind of show I want to be watching because I can. It's enjoyable and I can look at my phone at the same time. That's what I'm looking for in shows these days.
Not too taxing.
Yeah, exactly.
I know there's so many supposedly good shows where the episodes are an hour and 5 minutes and like. It's not going to happen. Like I have about an hour and a half to watch TV after my son goes to bed. And, like if it's an hour and 6 minute show, I'm going to be falling asleep by minute 54, like guaranteed.
We rewatched Friday Night Lights. I gladly recommend rewatching that show cause it's good. And also you just look at your phone.
It was such a weird era of production values that Friday Night Lights initiated with it, where it was like a fake documentary and the camera was just sort of like randomly zooming. And there was a lot of just like cutting to a really far away shot that looked like a surveillance camera for some reason. It was interesting.
Yeah, it's that was like, if you look at all the like early digital stuff, that's all like that, like Collateral's film that way, Miami Vice, like even... really, really early. Spike Lee's Bamboozled is also kind of filmed that way. It's really interesting. Like they had to realize you still needed an economy of shots to you just because you're not wasting film, you still need to.
Do you think that was the thing where they did it because they could, or they did it because they were trying to cover up the fact that it didn't look as good as like film stock still?
I think with Spike Lee and Michael Mann, it's different where it's like, ooh, a new toy, you know what I mean? Where some of those guys, I think it was, I don't know what I'm doing. Friday Night Lights probably somewhere in the middle.
Sure. I'll read you one article from March 22nd, 2006, just to situate us in time. from the New York Post. 08 roadblock, Rudy's rage. Rudy Giuliani still hasn't taken a concrete step toward running for the president in 2008, but he continues to lead his potential Republican rivals in all the polls, even in the reddest of GOP strongholds.
America's mayor.
Uh-huh. A Gallup poll last month gave the former mayor 33% of registered Republicans surveyed nationwide, putting him ahead of party stalwarts George Allen and John McCain. A University of North Florida survey last week showed him with an 11-point lead over McCain in the Sunshine State. So does Rudy really have a chance to be nominated by his party? I don't think so. Why? It has to do with an image of Rudy with which voters out there are unfamiliar, and which is sure to raise a lot of eyebrows in the GOP heartland. Mm-hmm. Particularly the Rudy Giuliani who was all over New York TV screens back on September 16th, 1992. The videotape shows thousands of police officers roaring in approval as, his face contorted and his high-pitched voice almost screeching, Giuliani led them in a chant of, "Bullshit! Bullshit!" Don't remember that. Don't doubt for a minute that this tape wouldn't wind up in someone's campaign commercials should Rudy decide to run and maintain his position in the polls. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Basically,
I don't think they knew the real Rudy Giuliani back then.
It's a very long article, but I guess the worry is that people are going to realize that he's an angry weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
I don't know. Did they ever figure that out?
I don't think so. I think it was more that he was like an inept guy who was like farting and melting on TV and and was drunk and like trying to molest the Borat daughter.
We don't talk about the Borat guy on this show, though. That's for your normal Frogcast, your Frogcast co-host's other show, right?
That's a Hasbro. That's a Hasbro story. Anyway, I feel like we're properly situated in time. Yeah. So let's talk.
You know what the best part about this episode was?
First of all, this is a great episode.
It's really good. This episode is really good, and it's entirely because of how much a catty little bitch Steven is. He's amazing in it. It's like
it is. That's like a big part of it.
It's like a reality TV
tour de force,
greatest of all time performance. It's really incredible.
It is.
But yeah, let's set the scene for his performance here.
You got to give the producers credit. I think this was a really well conceived episode. The title of it is Nasty Delights. Mm-hmm. The quick fire, which whatever. The quick fire. They had Laurent Manrique from Aqua. Which I remember, I don't think I ever went there, but I remember that being a restaurant in San Francisco. The funny part about this, the quick fire challenge is that, hold on, my notes app is crashing here. Why do you do that?
Well, the funny part about the episode is
I was trying to quote the part that I was remembering.
I'm gonna cover for you here while you're reopening your notes app. To me, the funny part of the quick fire challenge is, it's very similar to a challenge they would do on current day Top Chef, where they're like, we're going to give you something disgusting to cook.
Yeah.
Except in this, it is completely normal food. Yeah. It is not durian. It's not like...
the egg, the thousand-year-old egg or whatever.
It's not that mold that grows on corn.
Mm-hmm.
It's... octopus.
Octopus like it is just like this foreign disgusting food
and
item.
The way they do it is they're like, there's something under these cloches and we can smell it and it smells disgusting.
Right. Like, does I guess octopus smells bad. I mean, I assume it just smells like other seafood, right?
I mean, doesn't all seafood smell kind of bad when it's been sitting at room temp under a cloche for an hour?
That's true. I wonder how long they marinated it in the cloche. That's the quick fire is to, try
make
and make
the disgusting food octopus taste good.
Yeah. This is also like there's an opening, like a not quite a cold open, but right before they get to the quick fire challenge, and it's just Brian, who is lamenting the fact that what's her name, the one who went home last week, the personal trainer,
Andrea.
He's lamenting the fact that Andrea went home, and he's just like, "Oh, her body's so hot," and talking about what a great ass she has. And
he has like a real Patrick Bateman vibe.
Does he?
Kinda. Doesn't? Don't you think he's like?
He,
there's like a stare to him that is off.
He has very long eyelashes. Like he has very like Bambi style eyes, and and I sort of, it gives him like, I guess, like a little bit of uncanniness to him. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and the things he says are so like mid.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not quite interesting. Nothing he's ever said is interesting, and there's like a weird, like far awayness to his voice.
He's got a Danny quality to him.
Yeah.
From the season,
a little bit, yeah,
similar. We're not as bad. I think he's more entertaining than Danny, because he's, you know, he'll talk about another competitor's ass on camera, which is something that Danny would never do. But yeah, like personally, I don't think he is quite that interesting. So anyway, you know, they make the octopus.
Summertime and the living is thirsty again. Once again, I've done that joke. And once again, it's a great joke.
Very funny, Matt.
Thank you.
But you're right. It is summer. And during the summer, I love to keep Fiji water on hand to keep my family and me hydrated and refreshed.
Here's the thing about Fiji water. It really is from the islands of Fiji.
You're a liar.
No, I swear to God, it actually is. Drop by drop, Fiji water collects in a sustainable, ancient, artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. But I'm always wondering, Vince, how does Fiji water taste so good?
That's such a good question. And the answer is that as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji water its signature soft, smooth taste. You know, yesterday I happened to take my son to California's largest water park, and you know, it's hot out, the sun's beating down, you're carrying a toddler around, you get thirsty.
Sure do.
And you know what I did?
What?
I reached a meaty paw out for that natural artesian spring water that comes only from Fiji.
That's right. That's right. And listen, I enjoy Fiji water on a hot day. I enjoy Fiji water on a cold day. I enjoy Fiji water on a medium day. Just basically whenever I'm thirsty, I reach for a nice bottle of Fiji water.
I know your mouth gets dry when you're trying to do those royalty freestyles sometimes.
It does. It does. I have a very dry mouth. People have commented on that. And I like to wet it with the Fiji water. And here's the thing, Vince. Unlike some other premium bottled water, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's like the best kind of electrolytes. And this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7. Fiji water really is Earth's finest water. And since 2022, its 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles have been produced in 100% recycled plastic. So you can feel proud of your choice in bottled water.
Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office.
It's not just water, it's Fiji water.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I really liked the shot of Steven. Steven, for those of you who don't remember, is the
sommelier.
The sommelier who has frosted tips. I think he's had some work done, and he wears tie knots that are like thicker than my thighs.
Mm-hmm. And, he was not in the the way he is dressing is not in the classic 2006 Vice do's and don'ts style. He's in the completely opposite camp. He is not listening to Franz Ferdinand and wearing a very skinny tie, is what I'm trying to say.
No, he's he's dressed in 2006's version of doorman at a fancy restaurant, I guess. You have a nicely tailored suit and just like the biggest tie knot ever with like a colored shirt and a bright colored tie.
Yeah.
He makes this octopus.
It looked insane.
He arranged like three concentric lines of ingredients. There was one line.
Sliced so thinly.
One line of thinly sliced like rounds, like tentacle rounds. Mm-hmm. And then like another. And then there was like two sauces that were also perfectly like striped across
in
the plate.
A line, yeah.
And then and then tentacle tips, which were a little bigger than the thinly sliced rounds, were also.
It looked like a child. You showed them a photo of Michael Mina's food, which again is where he works.
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny like slice of life that this guy was like. They would not put a sommelier on the show on the one hand, but on the other hand, he's also like a CIA grad who works for Michael Mina. Yeah. So like he does fit the mold of a Top Chef competitor in a lot of ways.
And he's also like the best. I love him.
I mean, reality show.
I need more of him. I need
reality show character and wise. Like, you cannot find a better guy than this.
There's the combination of him and Dave is just like two sides of like two very different types of catty men. I don't even mean that in like their gay way, because I don't know if they are, but like just.
I'm pretty sure Dave is. I'm not sure about Steven.
I don't think Steven is for some reason, but Steven feels almost asexual, in fact, I would say. He's like, he's kind of Morrissey-esque.
Steven feels like a guy that grew up in like a shitty town like I did, but has spent his entire like adult life trying to make people forget that.
Yeah.
He's the guy that moves to a big city and then adopts like whatever people think about that city, if that makes any sense.
Yes. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes total sense.
And like the first two dishes that they pulled out in this were him and Tiffany, who both did octopus two ways. And they got 60 minutes to do an octopus, which on one hand like is much longer than you usually get in a quick fire challenge, but in another sense is like not nearly enough time to cook octopus, where I believe the thing is you either cook it for like a really long time or a really short time, otherwise it's just like rubbery and gross. They both did octopus two ways, which like I don't know how many seasons in we would discover that like doing something two ways
is bad. I think it's like season three.
So Tiffany goes on to win that one. She made an octopus with red wine braised angel hair pasta with cold octopus, which, you know, super exciting.
And she is told several times this episode that she's lucky that she did win the quickfire because she has a bad attitude.
She sure does. And so this next challenge, I feel like this next, the elimination challenge in this episode.
Well, something happens in between that we need to talk about.
That's right.
Cynthia the kooky lady, who's now a weed chef, has to go home because her dad is unfortunately gonna go.
But she did know the trick. Like in the quickfire challenge, she did reveal that she knows the trick to making octopus tender, yes. Which is to put a wine cork in the water, which I haven't looked up to find if someone at Sirius Eats has tested.
Do you mean Kenji Lopez Alt?
Yeah. I don't know if he's. I feel like he's probably tested that one to see if it's true or not.
Probably. That would be something. Like his thing. His thing is food mythbuster, so it makes sense.
Yeah, which is great because I find him like he does sort of what Alton Brown does, except Alton Brown is like one of the most annoying men in history, and Kenji Lopez Alt is just like kind of a normal guy.
I'm conflicted on Alton Brown. And I'll tell you
why. I can't stand him. I could never stand him.
I am sort of into like this, the idea, like making a food show look interesting was mm-hmm. cool. And this sort of idea where it's like, what if food science was also like, my food science show was also like Pee-wee's Playhouse. It's like,
right.
Fun idea.
And yet he never smiles because he's a fucking weird sociopath. So he'll be doing these bits where he's doing like the most theater kid, like theatrical opening ever conceived. And yet he is like being weirdly serious about it the whole time. And it's like fake serious.
I also have some information on that.
Go ahead.
So here's the thing about Alton Brown.
Spill the tea, bro.
This is a fun fact. This is a fun fact about Alton Brown.
I love fun facts.
Alton Brown was the camera operator on the Losing My Religion video by R.E.M.
Wow.
Which, now that I tell you, he's like an artistic cinematographer from Athens, Georgia. Doesn't that make all his shit sort of, doesn't the puzzle piece fall into place where it's like, oh, a serious guy who's also into camp?
Yeah.
He's like, dead center of the B-52s and R.E.M.
Yeah. I remember one time, like, I tweeted something about how, like, R.E.M. is like the greatest band ever to only have two good songs on every album.
Oh, and I disagree. I love R.E.M. But anyway, keep going.
I love those two songs. Yeah. Like those two good songs on every album are like really good. And the rest are not, in my opinion. But that's just me. And apparently, what's the R.E.M. guitarist's name?
Peter Buck.
I think it was Mike Mills.
Was it Mike Mills?
I think it was Mike Mills was like...
I think Mike Mills was more likely to have seen your tweet.
I think Mike Mills was like searching R.E.M. on Twitter and like quote tweeted me.
That's not
me.
What happened.
What?
I can tell you what happened.
What happened?
Mike Mills is friends with a friend of ours.
Oh.
And has seen me do stand-up. It's like the most nervous I ever was to look out and see like Mike Mills from R.E.M. doing stand-up.
Yeah.
So he was following a bunch of people who you're friends with, and it popped up in his feed.
Well, it's one thing. Like, I'm very comfortable talking shit to my friends about bands. I'm not comfortable talking shit to those bands.
The band? Yeah.
Yeah. That's a different context that I was not prepared for or wanting in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to delete this tweet because I don't want that smoke. I don't need to be arguing with the fanatical R.E.M. fans all day.
Bad take. Murmur's a perfect album. All right. Anyway, keep going.
Murmur. Okay. Okay.
So
what else you got?
Murmur's so good. All right.
What other ones have more than two good songs? Three, maybe. Let's
Document.
Say. Okay.
Green. The IRS stuff I love. Chronic Town. Ooh, love them all. Love all the songs on Chronic Town.
All right. I'll give you that. I don't think I've listened to Chronic Town all the way through.
Yeah, it's really good. All right. Back to Top Chef.
Yeah. Cynthia. She puts,
had to go home. She puts the wine cork in
she's
the
a old school cork soaker. And she finds out one of the greatest SNL sketches is the one that's built entirely around the concept of cork soaker sounding like cocksucker, and it's just like 5 minutes of them making cork soaker puns in Italian accents. Great sketch. I think that one had Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sands featured prominently. And, you know, I know we bash Jimmy Fallon a lot, mostly for fair
being
reasons.
An alcoholic?
But, oh, not that. But
no.
No, I don't bash him for that.
Well,
no, mostly for being like
off the air story. I've got to tell you.
No, but you know, for being the pandering guy who always breaks character.
Yeah, no, he sucks.
But
yeah.
That was a good sketch. Anyway,
yeah.
So Cynthia, what happens with Cynthia?
Her dad is sick and she has to go home. And also,
her dad is,
didn't taste very good.
Her dad is
even
sick,
even though it was tender
and dying. And you're sort of wondering, like, why are you still on this show? Like, you should probably go home.
So she volunteers to go home, and they bring back. I think this is the least consequential bring back in Top Chef history.
I remember, like, there was a few things that I remembered about this show 20 years later. And, like, one of the main things was, like, remembering, like, why this Andrea chick kept hanging around when she was clearly, like, so bad. She should have gone home in the first episode for making raw kale that still had dirt in it. She went home in the second one. And then they bring her back for some reason. Like, it would have been so much more interesting to bring back Ken Lee, the fucking insane Irish.
And they make that joke. They're all like, don't let it be Ken Lee. And they cut to him screaming with his knives.
Yeah.
But alas, it was not Ken Lee. They brought back Andrea.
So, like, watching this episode, like, a couple of things that stood out to me were... I can't believe that they haven't brought Cynthia back at some point on Top Chef because she had to go. Yeah, she's fun. She seemed like she sort of knew what she was doing, even as kooky and crazy as she is. And she just had to go home because her dad was sick. You'd think they would have brought her back. Also, I mean, I guess I understand why they didn't bring Ken Lee back because he's like a liability because he seems like
can't
he's
find him on the internet.
He always seems like he's seconds away from like getting done up for sexual harassment. But TV wise, oh man, great TV character.
Great TV character.
I think he definitely didn't like represent the kind of person that they wanted to represent Top Chef, and they were
a guy going, "Let's go."
Like, they were terrified of getting Me Too'd over him before Me Too was even a thing, like decades before. So they haven't brought those people back. Instead, they brought Andrea back.
Again.
And she's got a great ass! And you got your head all the way up it.
So then what happens is they split them into teams.
We got to describe this challenge because this challenge to me, again, one of the greatest in Top Chef history.
They've done this one since before, but they haven't done it in a long time.
It's funny that they wasted their, we want you to take something gross and make something good out of it. And they did it with octopus. And then in the next challenge, they bring out a monkfish, which is legitimately scary looking.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, you guys
you
are going
to
have
to feed this to a YMCA.
Yeah. You guys are going to have to cook this scary looking devilfish. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh man, that's going to be a tough challenge. And then they're like, and you're going to do
your
it.
The judges are 8 year olds.
Yeah. The judges are 8 to 12 year olds.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Great.
So they go
and
to
then this. They split them up into strange teams. Mm-hmm. I would say,
did they draw knives? I don't remember.
I don't remember. But the way it's split up where all the good chefs are on one team and all of the personalities are on the other team.
Yeah, they have a Harold, Tiffany, Leanne on one team with Dave.
Dave is good.
Yeah, no, that's all the good chefs on one
and
team.
And then Brian also on that team.
Right. And then the other team is Miguel, who's actually like kind of competent. Steven. Okay, yeah, pretty competent. And then Lisa, who is like the nice mom who like teaches cooking at a high school or something like that.
And then Candace. It's revealed everyone hates. There's been no...
I mean, at this point in the show, most of her character is that she wears different...
Like a head thing.
Hats. Yeah, she's got a headwear thing. Like, and she's wearing... A lot of hats that were hot in 2006, which are like Von Dutchie trucker hats and other stuff.
She definitely owns a cancelable headdress she's worn to a music festival. Yeah. Let's just say that.
She probably had multiple Christina Aguilera albums in her collection at this point. And and she's also
anyway,
like 23.
Anyway, Steven fucking hates her, which we didn't know until he ends up on a team with her and is just so mean for no reason immediately.
Can we talk about... So they send Candace and I forget who else. Candace and Lisa, I think. They send them out to shop.
Because they're like, Lisa, you're a mom. You're in charge.
Yes. And they come back with like some molds, like
cookie cutters, I believe.
Cookie cutters.
That's what he will later call them.
And Steven is horrified that someone would besmirch food by putting it in a mold.
Which is hilarious, but that's now a Top Chef staple, is a guy bringing their own molds.
I mean, fast forward to Buddha Lowe, who's the mold master who won two seasons in a row, probably like the greatest Top Chef competitor in the history of Top Chef. Partly because he brought a bunch of his own molds and would just make crazy food in the shape of a skull.
We
and shit.
Should do an episode where we try and decide, like we try and rank like the 10 greatest Top Chef guys and gals. Because
Buddha's got to be, you know, top five at least.
Michael Voltaggio, I think, is top five.
Yeah, that season was, there's a lot of good people on that season.
There's that season where Brooke just runs the table too. And then there's that season.
Brooke, Melissa King, all the
Melissa
people that
King just dominated.
Yeah. The people that are on like multiple seasons and finished highly in both of them generally are, you know, some of the best. But yeah. In 2006, molds were not. Yeah,
they're cookie cutters.
They're cookie cutters.
Anyway, Steven loses his shit when he sees these cookie cutters. And
how dare you do this?
Some
I want
of
to
the
put
meanest things I've ever seen.
I'm trying to arrange food in a line, and how dare you try to make it in the shape of a foot? And Candace utters like one of the lines that I've remembered all these years, where she just says, "You are a tool and a douchebag." Mm-hmm. And on the nose, but like, yeah.
Yeah. That's but Steven's reaction is just like, I may be a tool and a douchebag, but at least I know how to cook.
I think his first reaction was like, oh, that's all you got? Like,
yeah.
That's the best you could do?
Like, her calling him names just like feeds him. He wants more. He's like, he's like Katamari Damacy for degrading names.
Yeah. He's like, I've built my entire persona out of baiting people into calling me a tool and a douchebag. So then, they all have to get together and try and plan a monkfish dinner for 8 to 12 year olds, and it's almost evenly split between people who are like excited / willing to play the game and try to make this fun for kids, and people that are just objecting to the very idea that you should make
the foods chef
appealing.
Team is like, kids should not be allowed to eat. That's like their stance.
Yeah. And Tiffany, it's incredible that she's become, you know, like a top
a lovable
chef
food network personality.
Yeah.
Like, she's like a judge on Guy's Grocery Games, like one of the sweeter film, like TV food shows, because she is really not having this, and it's like coming off like this. This is like if she tweeted one of the things she said in this episode today, she would be the main character on Twitter for like a day of like people yelling at her about hating children.
She if not for the quickfire immunity, there would have been like 15 minutes devoted to Tom Colicchio ripping her a new asshole for everything that she said on this episode.
Because he's like, the customer's always right. Yeah. He's like, I'll deep fry a steak. Which, by the way, if you're ever craft Tom Colicchio, he does do special orders.
Yeah, now you know.
That's what we learned this episode. Which I actually think the Tiffany thing is, it's actually a really interesting 2006 thing. Because if you remember right, speaking of Momofuku, we brought this up. This is around the time that people are writing articles about how David Chang will throw people out of Momofuku for trying to make special requests.
Oh, really?
And also not refusing to make things vegan or whatever.
Mm.
So I actually think that's an interesting cultural holdover from 2006.
Yeah, I do remember at this time, this was like before I'd read Kitchen Confidential, which I actually really like. I like all of Bourdain's writing. But like when he first like came into my my cultural consciousness, like he was the guy who like hated vegans.
Yeah.
And I was always like, I don't
which
give
is
a
really
shit.
Funny because I think at this point, I think Bourdain would have went vegan. He'd be an old... Doesn't he feel like an old vegan guy? Like, I went vegan old. My doctor told me my heart was going to fail, so now I'm vegan.
He's a punk rock guy who got into jiu-jitsu, which, you know, makes him, like, very...
susceptible to veganism?
Yeah, susceptible to... Like, very near and dear to my heart, but yes, that is absolutely, like, a personality that would go vegan.
They're susceptible to Buddhism and veganism.
That's like his weaknesses if he was like a Magic the Gathering the character or something. But yeah, so Tiffany, Leanne, Harold,
they lose.
And Brian, who is the only one who is like actually playing the game and like trying to entertain kids.
Yeah.
And
because he's like, I was a YMCA kid.
Yeah.
He goes home because his carrots were bad.
Yeah, he made...
The best part is Tom was like, the kids are telling me these carrots are overcooked.
They did do that.
Brian tried to do a thing we won't see on Top Chef again now, but for like 5 years was a staple, which is knowing you're about to go home and then lying about like... who the leader of the team was.
Right. Yeah.
Brian gets in there and is like, this is all Dave's fault. Dave was the leader.
I mean, they ginned up so much more drama than you ever get in a Top Chef episode now, where like Dave was clearly like shitting on all of Brian's ideas, which were mostly bad. And they built that like it was like drama that they actually foreshadowed.
Yeah. It was great. It's great. This is a really good episode. Like,
and Brian actually, like, so the idea to make candied carrots as, like, a vegetable that kids will eat, like, as a guy with kids, that's a solid concept. Mm-hmm. Like, that's true. Kids will eat candied carrots. They are good. I mean, I like my carrots a little, like, soft. I don't like them. I don't want them with too much crunch on them.
Yeah, but I have this feeling they were, like, baby food. Mushy.
Yeah, they had to be. I mean, I feel like this is also... the era when, like, if it wasn't crunchy veg, like, people would get mad at you and act like you were terrible. I don't care. I don't care about that. I like vegetables that I can cut with my fork, whatever. Sure. But this was like the era when everybody would get dung for salad that was like overdressed.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
now
you had
to overdress the shit out of my salad.
Fuck yeah.
Give me
more too.
Flavor, dude.
Give me overdressed over underdressed any day.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, this was the era when, you know, if your vegetables were flabby or soft, people would call you out and be like, oh, you are a fake chef. This is bullshit.
Yeah.
So Brian ends up getting sent home, which was crazy because it seemed like Tiffany definitely...
Andrea is back.
Andrea's back. Andrea's back. A bunch of people made... Like, Tiffany... had a terrible attitude, and she made applesauce that everybody hated.
Yeah,
like she
was
bad.
Terrible
applesauce. Yeah. Like we're three episodes into this, to this season, and so far she's made like a cookie that everybody hated and applesauce that everybody hated in elimination challenges, and she's still there for some reason. And she's gone on to have like one
and
of the
she
best
has
careers.
A terrible attitude.
Like arguably the best career, at least TV wise, of anyone on this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could argue Leanne, who I believe was the food producer of Top Chef after this for like 10 years.
Yeah.
But yes, it's one of the two.
But she didn't go home. Brian went home. And again, I feel like that is someone that maybe they should have brought back. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
I don't know. He's too weird. I find him incredibly off-putting in a way that you do not.
No, I see where you're coming from, because he has those, like eyes that, I don't know. He's got like a sad scholarship child eyes.
Yeah, but there's also like a either sociopathy or a like an emptiness to him that I don't. It gives me, as they say, as the Yes Chef man from Jack's Diner would say, it gives me the ick.
The ick. I mean, he definitely did the thing where every time he would introduce food, he would be like, oh, and this is going to be scrumptious. And like he'd make weird
sensual
mouth sounds.
Yeah. I don't like it. It's gross.
And he's like, oh, he calls himself like a personal chef to the stars. Like, he's definitely like a weird, off-putting guy.
Yeah,
no,
I don't like
there.
Him. I don't like him.
That being said,
episode,
there was like
though.
There was
can't
like
wait.
Four people that should have gone home.
Yeah, can't wait for the next one.
Yeah. So they made a monkfish. One team made a monkfish corn dogs.
They both made monkfish fish. They both made fucking fish sticks. Man, one just baked them. The other one fried theirs.
Yeah. I mean, I
like,
know they
one was corn and it was a corn dog, but it's they were both. They were fish sticks. They made fish sticks.
Yeah. Which is like the first thing that one would think of. Like, how do I make monkfish appealing to kids? Fish stick. For sure. I know they've gone back to the cooking for kids well at some point on Top Chef seasons, but like it's
They definitely do it. There was one season of Top Chef, I believe, that had a lot of them watching people eat their food on a TV.
Mm.
And they definitely did kids that time where it was like they did not tell them that judges would be kids, and then they watched these kids be like, ew, yuck.
So another funny aspect of this challenge was like these teams like worked their ass off to try and make monkfish that didn't look like off-putting to kids and just looked like something that they would want to eat. And the way that Katie Lee introduces the challenge was she's like, she brings out a whole monkfish and she's like, isn't this gross?
Yeah.
What do you guys hate to eat? And they're like, fish. Ew. And then she's like, all right, you guys are up. Basically the opposite of warming up the room.
Uh-huh.
She did that, which I imagine was planned, but
yeah.
You know.
Oh, for sure. It's great.
Yeah.
Is that our episode, Vince?
Well,
do we have more to say?
I do have a little bit more to say. They had some of the most egregious dialogue added in post during Judges Table that I've ever seen. Because Tom would say like one thing, he'd be like, so your monkfish corn dogs, and then it would cut away from his face and go to audio that was clearly like recorded later, where he, you know, delivers like a paragraph of what his actual critiques
where
were.
He's clearly reading.
Yes.
Too. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah.
I would say it's wild watching this because Gail is such a baby. Like she's so young. Gail is so young. And Tom is kind of not all that confident, except when he's sort of talking to the chefs in the kitchen part. But like at the judges' table, he's
not confident with the TV part.
Yeah. And it's clear. But it also doesn't help that Billy Joel's wife is there also not confident with the TV part.
She's giving nothing.
She'll and her ADR is even worse, where it'll be like, so, Dave, tell us who you think should go home.
It was pretty bold to combine three people that none of whom really had much TV experience at the time.
It's
like you had
crazy.
A chef without much TV experience and Tom, restaurateur. Mm-hmm. And then you had like Gail, who was like a restaurant critic in a magazine who like, you know, clearly.
But who also reads, and I don't mean this as a rip. Like, I don't mean this as mean. But like Gail at this point on TV reads as like, oh, this is like a 24-year-old party girl. which isn't, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's fun, but it's like, fun. It's
and
just
she's clearly, like, she clearly has stuff to say, which
yeah,
I think
no,
is why
she's
she
awesome.
Works.
She's, there's a reason she, I love Gail.
I do too. Know? And she works because she's not like the typical person that you would imagine in this role. Yeah. Like now, like they had Top Chef Junior and it's got like Nick Lachey's wife on yeah. as the host.
And you're
and
like, of course, this is a child, someone hosting for children.
Yeah, because yeah. she's like a pageant person. Like she's very yeah. comfortable. Like she doesn't give a shit. She says like some of the dumbest things you'll ever hear yeah. onto the microphone. And it works because she has that sort yeah. of media training and media experience.
But
and none
Gail
of these
seems
people do.
Like a regular girl.
Yes.
I just found. And that's cool. It's cool. Like
a regular
I'm not even,
person
yeah.
who's like smart yeah. in terms of food. And
yes.
That's,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. For sure. But it's like, Gail feels like, oh, I know that lady.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like setting a precedent, like the criticisms in this episode were like
good.
Pretty dead on.
But the best ones all came from the kids.
Yeah,
they all were like, yeah. my carrots are overcooked and this fucking applesauce is shit.
Yeah. And Tiffany made like a big thing where she's like, I'm not going to put
food coloring
in applesauce. I'm just going to make yeah. shitty applesauce. Yeah. And they better eat it or else they're getting fucking yeah. sent to the orphanage.
Yeah. She's like, she has like a real like Matilda's teacher vibe in this episode. Yeah. And not the nice one, the principal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What we didn't do problematic content corner. Did you have any things that jumped out at you as like, this would be problematic?
I mean, I said it. It was Tiffany's entire attitude towards children.
Yes.
Weirdly problematic. Like, cancelable now.
Yes.
But also, if so, like, it goes both ways, too, right? Where it's like, she's like the opposite of those moms who tweet now who are like, you know, I don't even put my grocery cart away because I'm afraid my child's going to get kidnapped. Anybody else?
Yeah.
There's like, if you're on either side of the mom, non-mom spectrum on Twitter now, you get canceled. Like, too right. far on the spectrum. But yeah, that's all I sort of remember. Well, also, Brian talking about Andrea's body.
Yeah, Brian leering at Andrea's body, just male-gazing uh-huh. it up. But my famous, this was like a little throwaway moment, but Dave comes out in the Karate Kid.
Oh, I forgot the Karate Kid
headband. Yeah. Which looks great on him. Yeah, it's a good kitchen look.
It's awesome. It's a good gimmick, too.
It is.
Yeah.
But when he comes out, Tom Colicchio says to him, Dave, you got that bonsai look going. You're going to throw yourself on a sword if you lose. Which is just
Funny line.
It's a funny line. And it's such something that a dude from Jersey in 2006 yeah. would say, like, as a reflex. It's uh-huh. so great. Yeah. And now you're like, damn, dude, you went... He went double stereotype there. Anyway, great episode. I definitely think this is like one of the keystone episodes that turned Top Chef like into a phenomenon. I don't think we would know about
great.
Top Chef if not for this episode.
Yeah. We have Steven to thank
mm-hmm.
for people because, again, he's a tour de force in this episode. It's incredible the drama he brings on the winning team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too. He's on the winning team.
We are going to have to see if we can find Cynthia and, maybe Ken Lee, which I don't think, I feel like people have tried to find Ken Lee, but.
We should try and get Steven on this show. That is my new goal. Can we get Steven to watch an episode of this with us?
Oh, maybe. Who
I
knows
think
what
we
he's
might
doing?
Be able to. He comes back to Top Chef sometimes.
He does. I think he came back for an All-Star season and
yeah.
got kicked off early.
But then
I
think
correctly.
He also was on, remember that show where they had like the Italian guy like cook dinner? For his quote-unquote friends. I think he was also at one of those fake Top Chef dinners.
That sounds right. Joey, what have you cooked lately?
You know, I got a full-time job, and I haven't been cooking as much as I want.
Come on.
I know, it's hard. I cooked some scallops the other night. That was nice. It was like 1,000 degrees, and I was like, what can I cook in exactly 4 minutes. So I put scallops over like a salad with like I supremed a grapefruit and
oh my
an
goodness.
Orange. Yeah. And then I served like a over a salad with a citrus vinaigrette and like some fennel.
That
scallops.
That sounds like a signature dish from L'Auberge in Del Mar, California, where I worked as a server in 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounds about right.
Yeah. It was good. It was a good dish.
It's really
People liked
good.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. I attempted chicken tikka masala this week because I saw like an Instagram video where someone made it. Came out pretty good.
A lot of spices.
It's weird for as much as I enjoy Indian food, how few times I've attempted it at home. And I think this was my best attempt at it. It's kind of like, I feel like Indian food is just Italian food with like a lot of spices in it. Like it's the same basic format is there where it's like a protein like braised in a tomato heavy sauce, which is
that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't want to say it tasted, you know, like exactly like an Indian restaurant, but it was pretty good. I served it to a group of 11-year-olds who all ate it. So I feel like that was a success.
You would have, you're the opposite of Tiffany.
Yeah. Well, I didn't dumb it down for them. So maybe I'm not that different than Tiffany. But I also didn't have to cook a monkfish. That would have been harder.
Have you ever had a monkfish? Because I have not. Everyone says it tastes good.
I feel like I've had it at some point. I have an image in my head of it being like a tasty, flaky white fish, and I'm pretty sure that I must have eaten it at some point.
It's really a thing that Top Chef used to pull out a lot as like, look at this disgusting thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like now they just treat it like a normal fish.
Yeah. I've definitely never butchered one. I think I've butchered like 3 fish in my life.
No, when they cut that skin off on these episodes, it always looks so gross.
Mm-hmm.
That like gelatinous skin there pulling off that monkfish through that big old mouth. Mm-hmm. Ooh, what that monk mouth do? All right.
Yeah, I think that's been an episode.
I think that's our episode. Yeah, Vince.
Make sure you check out Jack's Dining Room on TikTok.
This fucking guy in New Orleans has the best po' boy. Let's try it out. Oh, let's go. It's an amazing po' boy. The best po' boy I've ever had.
It's cheesy. It's got like a lot. It's just the best wagyu.
The way the shrimp are fried.
This dude's got like an army of people making bagels back here. That's fire.
It's fire. Round Ball Rock, listen to it. We haven't had a new episode in like a month, but there'll be one up this week. Yeah. Vince, listen to the rest of the Frogcast. Subscribe to Vince's Substack.
Yep. VinceMancini.substack.com. Hope you guys are enjoying this little show we're doing.
Yeah, because we're enjoying it. I love talking to Vince for an hour every week.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.